one thing I want to hit you with right off the bat before anything else, just to kind of put a bit of a bow on a conversation we were having moments ago. The situation involving Chris Finch, now former Raptors assistant coach, being an assistant for the Raptors last night in the midst of a big win over Philadelphia, and in the hours after the game, he is suddenly the new head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Not an interim deal, but long-term and the full-time coach with a brand-new contract and everything else. Kind of a strange situation, though, to be sort of almost announcing Ryan Saunders' firing and Chris Finch's hiring all in one breath on the same night that Finch was just working with Toronto.
Yeah, it is. It was awkward to me. I don't know the rules and everything, of course, clearly. But, it was an eye-opening situation that I don't know how it went about. I don't know. Usually it's like an interview process. I know you have your interim coaches that usually you might move up or transition, you know, during that season. Then you have your interview process. But it's a little weird. I'm not sure what else you can say about that.
Al, Eric and I have been tossing it around. A lot of people have been talking about the Raptors and looking at them a couple weeks ago and, you know, do you kind of throw this season out the window, at which point we thought it was way too early? We're approaching the halfway mark now, and Toronto's right there. They're in the mix. They're, you know, they're top four, five. They're improving. They're getting better. I think guys are falling into better role definition. The chemistry's coming. So put your GM hat on here, Al. Do you kind of go forward with what you have, banking on internal improvement, or are you willing to kind of take a chance with a piece on your roster that you know is a good piece to move to try to get what potentially could a better piece? Is the devil you know better than the devil you don't, or is the devil that you might get going to be better than anything you have?
Yeah, since you put it that way, I'm always looking at the future. It seems like, you know, Raptors are going to have to make some decisions now, and then, you know, at the end of the season, you have, expiring contracts. You have to look at, you know, what else that you can bring to put around the commitment you made to the younger guys, you know, OG, Fred, and Pascal, so even Chris Boucher. So, and I think all those pieces are right where you want them to be. Now it's about who do you put there. And now you have a Kyle Lowry who, you know, I hate talking about it like that, but that's something you really have to consider and revisit because you don't want to lose Kyle for just anything, right, for nothing. So you gotta consider those things for the future. So with this current team, I would definitely be looking at the future and what I could bring in and keep these pieces that I've committed to and keep enhancing the overall projection of the team.
Speaking with Alvin Williams, Al, we kind of went down this road a little bit, I guess, when we chatted last week with you, but I'm going to do it again. And I'm asking you, as a guy who's been there as a player, you've been there as a coach, you've worked on the management side as well. Everything you were just saying about Kyle, this is something Jonesy and I addressed earlier in the show. Is there a case to be made for, and this is maybe why the question and answer is not clear, is there a case to be made for, as much as you just said, you know, maybe you're looking towards the future and looking at what assets you could potentially get, et cetera, is there also a case to be made for a lot of the guys that you thought were available, and not just Giannis, a bunch of other dudes as well, guys that you thought were going to be available next summer, this coming off season, are not available now because they've signed. So is there a mentality that says, well, it's better to stick with what we have and go long term with what we have, what we know, i.e. re-sign Kyle, bring back Norm Powell, rather than trying to go find something else that may or may not fit? Go with what you know fits and what you know works.
Yeah, you look at your own first. You always look at those possibilities, and I always watch teams and see how quick they were to try to re-sign their own guys. If the teams weren't really quick to try to do that, it was something there that possibly that the other teams or people from the outside didn't know. But yeah, Kyle is somebody you gotta consider and make sure that the direction of your team where it currently stands, can we make another push for a championship? Because it's not the old Raptors. This is the championship Raptors, where the expectations and the beliefs are high. And it's not just, you know, going with the flow. It's really putting yourself out there, getting back at that prominent stage of, you know, winning and being that number one team. So, you know, you got to consider that. And if Kyle Lowry or Norm Powell, these guys, you don't see bringing that with this current roster, then you have to be responsible. And it's, you're obligated to make sure you give your team the best situation as possible to get back to that status of winning again. So, once again, you definitely look at Kyle and see how you can bring him back if it makes sense and if it doesn't constrict you from doing anything in the future. But you definitely have to consider it. But you also have to make sure you do what's responsible and best for the organization.
Al, how much, and it's different with each guy, you play to win. You're also playing, let's not mistake the business side of the game. And you know, you're being paid handsomely to play the game. Where's the balance between, I'm going to take a little less money with a chance to win, or no, I can't leave that money on the table, even though, you know, that club might not have the same chance to win that than another one that has offered me less money or the one I'm with now. Where do you, as a player, where do you kind of strike the balance, and how much does your experience play into it? Like, you know what, I've been around 5, 6, 7 years, I've made a lot of money, or I've been around 5, 6, 7 years, and this is my first big deal after bouncing around. Like, how do you weigh that, Al? What, give us your, I mean, it's different for each guy, but give us your own personal take on that.
Yeah, and you just said it. It's different for each guy. For the most part, and I hate speaking generally, I'm thinking players will want the money, right? They of course, you want to win and you want to do things and you play to win. But when it comes down to sacrificing the dollar over a championship that you potentially can get and not guaranteed, then, you know, a lot of people won't go with what they know. Like you said, the devil that I know, right? So I feel like for the most part, the players are going to go for that dollar amount, whether it's a good location or the ideal location or the ideal team. But the dollar is the one that is the driving force for the most part, because the championships, man, once again, everyone comes into the season. It's maybe one or two teams that you already know that's going to win this championship. It's not like anything else. It's pretty much known. And if you're not with one of those teams, they're giving you a chance to win each year and out, then let me go get this money and make sure I compete and try to do what I can do to help our team win. But players are going for that money.
Speaking with Alvin Williams, Al, when you mentioned going into the season, you know, a couple of teams, a handful of teams, here we are now at about the 30, 32-ish game mark for most teams. We're almost at that halfway point of the 72-game season. Who are those teams this year? And in a longer-winded question here, you know, from a Raptors perspective, we've certainly talked about the fact that there doesn't seem to be a lot of teams in the East that are scaring you. Certainly Brooklyn's coming on right now. They're playing some extremely great basketball, but they don't seem to play a lick of defense. Philadelphia, okay, they're good. I don't know if they're great. They're good. Milwaukee's good. Pacers, Celtics. Like, I don't know if there's anybody scaring you in the East. And then I look in the West, and are we just waiting for the Lakers to kind of do their damage come postseason again when LeBron takes it up to another notch? I know they're playing without AD right now. The Clippers, again, good, but maybe not as great as a lot of people were anticipating this year. The Utah Jazz, are they going to come back down to earth? Are they really, you know, the championship contender right now? Like, who's the team this year, or who are the handful of teams that we're saying, like, yeah, those are the ones?
Yeah, it's so much uncertainty, because whether it's due to, you know, the status that we're in, you know, as a country, or the players not even playing. Certain rosters are, you know, you have AD, he's not playing, so you don't have a full throttle yet, and he's going to be out for a bit. You look at the Nets, and KD's not playing, so it's still hard to say who's going to be what. But your Utah Jazz is playing the most consistent basketball. But once again, and I think if we look at the Clippers last year, how they collapsed in the playoffs. So you really have to wait and see. Even the top teams, anything can happen. Milwaukee Bucks are not playing great right now. Boston Celtics not playing great. But we looked at all these teams as being potential teams that could come out of the East. The Sixers are playing very consistent basketball. The Raptors are coming around. So it's just so much uncertainty. To answer your question, it's hard to point out. But a lot of times it boils down to what teams have the best players. So you always look at the Lakers and see how they're going to come about. And then you got to go with the Brooklyn Nets for right now because they have the best players. And just see how those teams will start to generate some energy and some consistency behind winning. But if you look at the NBA, you know, historically, they always the teams with the best players and how they fit, those are the ones that's going to win championships at the end of the day. So I'm still looking at the Lakers or Brooklyn Nets of one of those teams coming out of the East and West.
Al, last one for me. What do you make of the Paul George situation last night where he was on a minutes restriction, he was tearing it up, but he sat the last 2-3 minutes of the game?
At the minute restriction thing, man, I get it. I get exactly what they're trying to do. I get the sports science. I get what they're trying to be, you know, proactive and making sure someone's ready for the most important time of the season. So, you know, they put those numbers down before the game and before sometimes by the week of how much they're going to have players exert energy and all that type of stuff. And so you have to stick to it. I was here with the Sixers when we were going through it, when they were going through it with Joel Embiid. And Joel Embiid could only play about 21 minutes a game, and then it would ramp it up a little bit more. And there were times where he was rolling and the Sixers was trying to get a win, and then he would have to come out. And it's a real thing. So I understand what it's been. And those doctors are making the call. So those doctors are not going to have a feel of, if this is the right time in a game, take him out. Once we set this number, this is the number he's playing. So the people that are making a call, they have no concern about X's and O's. They have no concern about the feel of the player. And how they know what they have to do and what they put in place to make sure this player is healthy as they have to be for the end of the season. So I understand it. I'm not a big fan of it, but I definitely understand how they're going about it.